Bank, 9 are killed in the latest wave of attacks. And pro-Palestine rallies continue unabated across the world. Protesters accuse Israel of committing genocide in Gaza, calling for an immediate ceasefire. Hello everyone, welcome to World News. Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip is now in its 28th day, with the death toll constantly growing and now passing the 9,000 mark. More than 3,800 children are among those killed. In the latest attacks, an Israeli airstrike on the Buraj refugee camp in the center of Gaza City killed 22 people. Israeli jets also bombed the Jabalia refugee camp for a third day on Thursday. Regime strikes on the camp have left hundreds of people dead and wounded. A journalist working for Palestine TV stations also killed after an Israeli strike hit his home in the city of Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees says four schools sheltering the displaced have been damaged as a result of Israel strikes. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it's carried out a counterattack on Israeli forces in the northwest of Gaza City. This comes as the regime is pressing ahead with its ground offensive on the Strip. Armed wing of Hamas said its forces fired salvos of mortar shells, destroying 6 Israeli tanks and 2 armored personnel carriers. The Al-Qassam brigades added number of Israeli troops were killed and injured as a result. The brigades also said Israel's military death toll is much higher than what the regime announced. A group has warned Gaza will be, in its words, the curse of history for Israel. It added regime's forces enter the besieged territory will go home in black bags. Israeli military claims its troops have now encircled Gaza City and says 17 troops have so far been killed in its ground operation. Hundreds of foreign nationals have left Gaza through the Rafah crossing with Egypt after it was opened Thursday for a second time in 2 days. Some have spoken about the war in Gaza, with one, a Korean national, describing the situation beyond difficult.
I have a Korean nationality and we live in Gaza. Almost a month into the war in Gaza. Thank God today we left Gaza to Egypt. Thankfully, we left behind the war and this situation, but our family and relatives are still in Gaza. The situation in Gaza is really difficult. It's very bad. I hope everyone continues to publish about this issue because it's still ongoing. We were displaced from Gaza City to Khan Yunis in the south. The bombardment is everywhere, in the south, in the north, in Gaza, wherever you go. The bombardment was ongoing when we came to the south. The situation is difficult and the bombardment is intense.
Palestinians in the West Bank also face Israeli aggression as regime's forces carry out raids on different parts of the occupied territory. At least 9 Palestinians have been killed in the latest wave of attacks throughout the West Bank. 5 lost their lives in an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp. North of occupied territory, 17 were wounded. Locals say regime forces used live rounds during that raid. 4 more Palestinians were also killed in attacks near Al-Khalil and East Al-Quds. At least 143 Palestinians lost their lives in the West Bank since October 7th. That's when Israel began its onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip. Tensions have also been on the rise ever since in the West Bank as well. And now Chile has renewed its concerns over the Gaza war, with President Gabriel Boric telling his U.S. counterpart that what's taking place there is unacceptable.
I told President Biden of our concerns on what is happening in the Gaza Strip. The number of civilian deaths grows day by day. What's happening in Gaza is simply unacceptable and violates international humanitarian law.
Boric also spoke about captives held by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and demanded their release. He met with President Joe Biden in Washington. A meeting took place at a time when Biden was under growing pressure inside and outside the U.S. for failing to make Israel stop its war in Gaza. Earlier this week, Chile joined a chorus of international criticism against the regime's unrelenting bombing of Gaza, recalling its ambassador to Tel Aviv. and another South American country, Colombia, took a similar move, and elsewhere in the continent, Bolivia all-out cut ties with the Israeli regime. International outcry against Israel's brutal strikes on Gaza continues to mount with large-scale demonstrations across the globe. Jewish American advocacy group closed a highway in the city of Durham, North Carolina, demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. Group activists deplored Israeli bombardment of Gaza, the dire situation of its hospitals, and lack of essentials such as food and water. Activists called on President Joe Biden to help bring an end to the bombing of Gaza. And in France, people held a vigil in the capital, Paris, accusing Israel of committing genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip. And Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have observed a general strike in protest at Israel's war crimes in the Gaza Strip. This as Palestinians continue to bid farewell to more marchers amid an escalation of fighting between resistance fighters and Israeli regime forces.
As the Israeli regime presses ahead with its atrocities, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have held a general strike to express their condemnation. The shutdown brought busy life to a standstill, but protests and demonstrations were already organized all across the main cities. In one of those rallies, protesters marched to the headquarters of the United Nations in Ramallah, demanding an immediate stop to the genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians in Gaza.
These nonstop massacres in Gaza and the latest committed against the Jabalia refugee camp are a failed attempt to weaken the Palestinian resistance and break people's steadfastness. Fighting is continuing, and the resistance groups are causing severe losses to the Israeli forces. And our people in the West Bank are also fighting the Israeli military measures and brutality.
We have the same occupation, and we are the same people. Geography does not, you know, divide people. We are just the same. We are all targets. Whenever you are a Palestinian, you are a terrorist, and you should be killed. People are killed for no reason and for nothing. So, you know, this is complete genocide. This is complete war crimes that should be stopped immediately, right now.
On the other hand, Israeli regime has escalated its military operations and incursions all over the occupied territories. Four Palestinians were killed on Wednesday. Three of them were martyred in Jenin during a military raid to the city and its refugee camp, and the fourth was killed in Tul Karim. The Israeli military has also used drones during this recent raid to Jenin. This assault has caused severe damage to a number of buildings and to the alleys. During the funeral procession of the martyrs, identified as fighters from Fatah's Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, mourners vowed to continue fighting and avenge the killing of Palestinians in Gaza and here in the West Bank.
We have bid farewell to three martyrs, leaders of the Al-Aqsa Martyr Brigades, who have been killed during the military raid on Jenin. There's a clear message sent by this criminal Israeli military that is targeting all the Palestinian resistance groups and not a specific one. All resistance groups are united in facing the Zionist war cabinet and fighting its offensive.
So far, 130 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, and over 2,000 have been wounded. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, almost 1,800 Palestinians were detained during the daily raids. And for the third week, entrances to most Palestinian villages, towns, and cities have been blocked by military checkpoints, earth mounds, cement blocks, and iron gates, preventing movement between them amid an increased Israeli crackdown. Palestinians say the heavy crackdown is meant to prevent them from engaging in different forms of anti-Israel activities. With the escalation of Israel's aggression on Gaza, the regime's military has also been stepping up violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Despite that, Palestinians in the West Bank say they would not back up from supporting their brothers and sisters in the Gaza Strip. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
And now joining us out of Beirut, Lebanon, is Mariam Saleh. Hello, Mariam. Hope you're safe and doing well out there. We know that Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Seyed Hassan Nasrallah, Mariam, is going to give his first public comments since Israel started this bombing campaign on the besieged Gaza Strip. Do we have any prelude or heads up on what he may speak about?
Well, we definitely don't. We don't have exactly on what he will be talking about, but we can see from the enthusiasm of the people that they are expecting a lot today from Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah. We are expecting that he will be definitely drawing red lines for the Israelis and even for its supporters, the United States, France, the Western world. So basically, this is mainly what we're talking about here today. Of course, Seyed Nasrallah's speech is usually that of praise for the martyrs. He begins by praying to God for blessing the souls of the martyrs, praying for healing the wounded. And of course, there will definitely be a word of a very strong sympathy and solidarity with the people of Gaza. And since they have stressed as a resistance that their main front now is that of liberation for Al-Quds. Of course, when we see the crowds behind us, the place has already been filled even more than 2 hours before the beginning of the rally, where we're expected to see, listen to the speech. Of course, there's still hundreds of people still coming from their houses on foot, coming ready to take part in this rally, something which is probably as big as the Ashura procession and perhaps even bigger. And so definitely there's a lot of sympathy, a lot of very high emotions from the people towards the people of Gaza, especially those atrocities that are being occurred. People don't know how to express this. Their only weapon is that of shouting their slogans and supporting the resistance. Of course, some believe that it is time now that the resistance takes on the battle till the end. However, the others, of course, they all have full trust in the resistance leadership, especially that of Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah. Now, today, Hezbollah has chosen a phrase from the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, as their main slogan, which is when Seyed Ali Khamenei said that the next world is the world of Palestine. Now, of course, that has a lot of meanings. There are so many implications into that phrase. When we say that the next world, what does that mean? We're talking about the people, the populace, and the rest of the world. Everyone is supportive of Palestine. You see that growing enthusiasm, that growing support for the Palestinian cause more than any time in the past, despite the vast media campaign in support of the Zionist regime after the 7th of October. From the mainstream media, you have a lot of alternative media, you have a lot of activists, whether in the United States itself, in the Western world in general, basically stressing more than ever that they have the right to support the Palestinian cause, since it is a righteous cause. And all the Israelis are doing is committing massacre after massacre. And had the Israelis been held accountable before for their previous massacres in the last 8 decades or so, less than 8 decades, then there would have been deterred from committing these continuous crimes that they are committing in Gaza and in the West Bank, and the continuous atrocities that are over there and also in Al-Quds. So today, we will definitely be hearing a lot of words of warning, not only against the United States and Israel, but also against the Arab regimes that have, until now, with more than 8,000 innocent people, more than 4,000 children killed, taken from under the rubble, and still not one single Arab regime has decided to sever its ties with the Israeli regime and expel its ambassador. That is an issue that is considered atrocious by the people of Lebanon and Palestine, of course, all the Arab populace. We've heard also from the Algerian parliament, the first time we hear from a parliament, from an Arab parliament, voting 100%. All the members of parliament in Algeria say they want to take part in the war against the Israeli regime. We have that growing sentiment of the fact that now is the time to push for a liberation of Palestine. What is new here is that you have an intertwined battle of martyrs from Hezbollah's resistance, from the resistance in Palestine, from other resistance factions in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, ready to sacrifice and ready to take this war towards the end. in order to support the Palestinian cause. Now I think for the first time we are looking at a battle, which is the battle for Al-Aqsa, Al-Quds, and that this does not only mean Al-Quds, it also means all of Palestine. And for the first time, you are hearing people inside the United States daring to say that from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. This is considered something which is huge and very remarkable transformation in the entire world. And this is why the slogan today by Hezbollah, which is chosen, that the next world will be the world of Palestine, not the new world order that United States has been trying to do with all the bloodshed and the killing and in the region and outside the region. But this is something that will be a change from the populace. Now, we don't want to say and have really high hopes for Hezbollah's speech. We can expect that he will definitely be drawing red lines. But the question remains, why did Hezbollah declare that there was a speech 1 week earlier? Were there any sort of ultimatums being given by Hezbollah towards Israel and the United States to stop its aggression on Gaza? We don't see the aggression stop yet. We don't see any movement. They're just talking about a humanitarian truce, but we don't see clear action from the international community to stop the onslaught against the people of Gaza. Last night, of course, the Israelis continued their firing and their shelling on a nightly basis. You can see the whole light, the sky colored orange because of the flare bombs and the phosphorus bombs that are being used, which are illegal bombs. We need to stress that more than once, to stress that the Israelis are using illegitimate means to kill the people. And we can see, of course, definitely that even the Israeli media itself, you know, from the Daily Haaretz, that one writer said that it was clear that the Gazans were taking out three-month-old terrorists. And that is, of course, saying it in ridicule to this campaign, to the continuous killing, that what they're killing is actually innocent children and not any one who is a fighter. The Hamas fighters have stressed in their letter to the fighters of Hezbollah that the Israeli regime, the Israeli enemy, is cowardice to the extent that they are incapable of coming to face us face to face and confront us and fight with us. Instead, what they're doing is killing our innocent women and children and our elderly, but we are ready to face them as you have faced them. And they're talking, of course, addressing Hezbollah's fighters, as you have been the masters of the battlefield. We too will be fighting alongside you, and you have been fighting alongside, of course, and we can see your martyrs fall for the sake of Al-Quds and Palestine. Now we have united our blood, as they said, together in one battle. And I think that this battle would probably be in an accumulative mode until it reaches to an extent where we probably might see a regional war. Of course, the U.S. said they want to only deterrence. They want to limit the escalation as much as possible. But as long as they're supporting the Israelis in their continuous crimes, I don't think Hezbollah's resistance will be silent anymore.
All right, thank you, Mariam, for that update there. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On October 7th, Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the group's biggest military action against the Israeli regime. It was a natural response to years of brutal oppression against the Gaza Strip and the deliberate desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque, among other things. The recent escalation between Hamas and the Israeli regime has now stoked fears that the conflict might spill over into the whole region, dragging major players such as the Islamic Republic into the war. A few days after the onset of the escalation, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian warned Israel that West Asia could spiral out of control if it did not stop strikes in Gaza. This warning was widely interpreted as a declaration of intent for Tehran to enter the conflict, if not directly, via its close allies such as Lebanon's Hezbollah and Syria. Such interpretations have already raised the specter of a major escalation. But should the region brace itself for a doomsday scenario? Will Israel attack Iran after years of warnings? And what's Iran's position? These and more on this episode of Iran Today. Since the very beginning, Iran has taken a clear-cut position towards the developments in the Gaza Strip. The Islamic Republic has lauded the success of the October 7th operation by Hamas and at the same time has condemned Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip, in which more than 8,000 people have been killed. At the same time, Tehran has repeatedly declared that it opposes the conflict's expansion to other parts of West Asia, while also denying involvement in the October 7th attacks. This all has been clearly reflected in the words of the leader of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Just 3 days after the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei not only commended the military action, but also asserted that those who doubted this being the work of the Palestinians do not know the Palestinian nation and are miscalculating. Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized that while the entire Islamic world stands in solemn obligation to support the Palestinians and will do so with divine consent, this is the work of Palestinians themselves. This is Mr. Mehdi Azizi, the director of Negah-e-Nou Center for Media Studies.
As for Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Tehran has asserted that it was totally a Palestinian move. Basically, it was formulated and orchestrated by Palestinian think tanks and had nothing to do with Tehran. Needless to say, it doesn't mean that Tehran is indifferent to the issue. We asserted even back in 2006 that the Islamic Republic of Iran would support the Islamic resistance movement in Lebanon, Palestine, and wherever it might be. So again, it doesn't mean that Iran has abandoned the Palestinian cause or has stopped supporting the resistance movement. No, not at all. But again, the move is totally Palestinian.
Western and Israeli leaders have also said there was no evidence Iran was involved in the operation. Meanwhile, some, mainly in the West, say it remains unclear how far Iran would be willing to go in case of a wider escalation. To know more, we talked to Dr. Sadullah Zarei of Andisha Sazeh Noor Institute for Strategic Studies. He is also a professor of political science at Allama Tabatabai University. Dr. Zarei says Iran and the Israeli regime have been at loggerheads with each other for more than four decades.
Iran has really been at war with Israel during the past 45 years, as has Israel been at war with Iran. As you know, the Israelis, for instance, have assassinated some of our nuclear scientists, so this is a real war. The two sides are also involved in cyber war against each other. Iran has been steadfast in its support of the Palestinian nation against the atrocities of the Israeli regime. In the case of Operation Al-Aqsa, Tehran has shown its complete support. So when it comes to the Palestinian cause, the Islamic Republic has never been on the margin. Currently, Iran's foreign minister is perhaps the only foreign minister among the Muslim countries that has traveled across the region to rally support for Palestine and the people in the Gaza Strip.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iran has opposed the Israeli regime in favor of the Palestinian cause. And now Iran's potential entry into the Gaza war will open a new chapter in the hostilities between the two enemies. But what are the odds that Tehran takes this direction?
On October 15th, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said, "We have conveyed our message to Israel through its allies that if they do not cease their atrocities in Gaza, Iran cannot simply remain an observer." 2 days later, on October 17th, the leader of the Islamic Revolution issued a sterner warning to Israel, stating, "If the crimes of the Zionist regime continue, Muslims and resistance forces will become impatient, and no one can stop them." But does it mean direct involvement in a full-scale war? To Dr. Zari, all options are on the table.
Do you think a direct military war would happen between Iran and Israel?
This is a real all-out war, but let's be more specific. Will Iran enter the conflict with its own jet fighters and missiles? If we feel that the situation will not be resolved without our direct military involvement, don't doubt that the Islamic Republic will do that. But in case it is not necessary, it's quite natural that we will not get involved in the conflict as we don't seek to fan the flames of the war. We will do our best to stop the war and prevent it from spilling over into the region. At the same time, we will do our best to save the Palestinian people from the Israeli bombardment.
Iran has made it clear time and again that it is only likely to engage in direct conflict if Israel attacks Iranian territory or Iran's strategic interests in other countries. During recent military drills in central Iran, Defense Minister Mohammad Reza Ashtiani warned that any inconsiderate act against Iran will provoke a strong reaction.
We are not after warmongering. This is not our strategy. The Islamic Republic of Iran has never started a war since its establishment. We have never started a tension in the region. Never. So the main principle is to avoid war, tension, and instability in the region. But this policy should not be unilateral. I mean, it's naive to see, for example, the Israeli regime is disrupting peace in the region and do nothing to stop it.
Despite its constant warnings, the Israeli regime appears to be reluctant to take direct military action against Iran. Tel Aviv does not have a death wish. The Israelis are fully aware that open confrontation with Iran could be very costly.
Israel's embarrassing failure on October 7th against a resistance group is a telltale sign that the regime's claimed invincibility is no more than a myth. As a major country in the region with great military prowess and deterrence, Iran is no easy target for any country in the world, let alone a regime that cannot even defend itself against a Palestinian group.
Despite displaying animosity towards Iran, the Israeli regime seems to be unwilling to attack Iran directly. Why do you think that is?
It's not feasible for the Israeli regime. In Lebanon and Palestine, the resistance groups have become more powerful. The Iron Dome and the United States military aid have proved ineffective. As a Western expert put it the other way, the Israeli regime cannot even survive for 3 days without foreign aid and support. The blows Israeli regime has received since 2006 and the situation it is trapped in show that Israel is not prepared for a long full-scale war.
Moreover, Israel has no common border with the Islamic Republic. The geographical distance between Haifa and the Iranian border city of Mehran is over 1,800 kilometers. And the regime would have great difficulty, if possible at all, to dispatch its forces to the Iranian borders. The regime may conduct airstrikes if it manages to pass over the skies of countries such as Syria and Iraq, which have close ties with Tehran, and if it manages to pass through Iran's defense system. This is Mr. Mehdi Khorsan, an Iranian expert in international relations. He thinks the Israeli regime will rue the day if it takes military action against Tehran.
How probable do you think that Iran and Israel will have a direct confrontation?
Look at the way they are dealing with Hamas, a lowly group with no significant support. The Israeli regime, for example, boasts about its Iron Dome. On the other hand, Hamas is a group with limited military power. It's a group under blockade which does not have the technical know-how when it comes to military things. And yet, you see, the regime cannot handle the situation and instead is killing women and children in blind rage. This can illuminate what the situation would look like for the regime in case it goes to war with Iran. Right now, Israel is engaged with Hamas, but there are other resistance groups. Hezbollah has just warned the regime and has not yet had a serious entry into the war theater. It seems that Hamas, the Islamic Jihad movement, and Hezbollah, if form a coalition, can wipe the regime off the region.
That said, the geographical conditions of Israel make the regime prone to Iran's retaliatory attacks. Despite Israel's claims about its military system, experience has shown that it is highly vulnerable, especially against a country like Iran. The Lebanese journalist and political analyst Mr. Hakam Amhaz agreed that geography plays a crucial role in this regard.
The region's geography is of paramount importance. In terms of geopolitics, geoeconomics, and geomilitary, the region is located in the middle between the East and the West, and almost 20% of the world economy is concentrated in this region. So, can you imagine what would happen to the world if something happens to this region? It means a huge loss, not just for the region, but for the whole world. Right now, countries such as the US, Russia, Iran, and China each have counted on this region for their own purposes. What happens in this region could be very critical. The next world war might start from this region.
In case of war with Iran, the Israeli regime has to fight on different fronts, as Iran's allies in the region would not remain mere bystanders. And above all, war with Iran would spill over the region with unintended consequences for the whole world. We asked Dr. Zari about what the West calls Iran's proxy war in the region. He said such war is against the Islamic Republic's core principles.
In your opinion, do you think that Iran would engage in a proxy war against Israel? That is, if Hezbollah decides to attack Israel, would that be Iran's proxy? And to what extent does Hezbollah comply with Iran's interests and commands?
Let me be quite frank. The Islamic Republic of Iran doesn't believe in the so-called proxy war. We don't consider proxy war as a legitimate defendable project. We don't believe that a group should bear the brunt for another group. Take Hezbollah, for example. The group is not subordinate to Iran and is not supposed to follow Iran's orders. As a resistance group, it has ties with Iran. It is Iran's ally but is independent of the Islamic Republic. The reason why Hezbollah...
This is a special coverage of a live event.
Dear listeners, here we interrupt the normal course of our program and go live to Beirut, where Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, is going to speak. Let's take a listen.
May peace be upon you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I salute this gathering on the occasion of
our expression of pride for all our martyrs, for those whom we gather today in order to honor their memory and in order to renew the pledge to their blood and to their goals. We are today commemorating the memory of those martyrs, the martyrs of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, the martyrs of Hezbollah, the martyrs of the Lebanese Saraya Brigades for resisting the Israeli occupation, the martyrs of the Qassam Brigades in Lebanon, the martyrs of the Quds Brigades in Lebanon, the civilian martyrs who were martyred unjustly by the Zionists, including journalists. First of all, to the families of the martyrs, since we're talking about martyrs in Lebanon, both Lebanese and Palestinian, to the families of the martyrs, we extend our congratulations for their beloved getting this holy Medal of Honor, and also we extend our condolences for them losing their loved ones, those who were members of their families, whether a father, a brother, a husband, a son. And I pray to God that He accept these sacrifices. And we also extend our congratulations and our condolences to all of the families of the martyrs in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, in every place where martyrs have fallen in this conflict, the conflict of Al-Aqsa Storm, which has now extended to more than one front and more than one square. The martyrs, I won't take too long talking about martyrs. In a few days we have the Shaheed Day or Martyr Day, we'll speak more then, but these martyrs have achieved a great victory. It is enough to read some of the holy verses concerning the martyrs. This is enough for them to be a source of pride for their families and for all of us, and so that we may be certain regarding the place where they have arrived, the place where they went, a place where no one has seen, no ear has heard, no one would be able to understand or comprehend. God refers to the martyrs saying, those who are killed in the cause of God, they will be rewarded, and they will enter paradise which was made for them. O you who believe, if you fight in the cause of God, God will grant you victory and enable you to stand firm. In the Umran verse, do not consider those who were killed in the cause of God as dead, but rather living with their God. And they are happy which God has given them. And they are also awaiting those who have not arrived yet. There should be no fear for them. They will not feel any sorrow, and anticipate the reward from God. God does not let anything go to no avail. On the day of judgment, everyone will be alive. But today, the martyrs, they are alive. They are happy. They are living with the blessings of God. And don't say those who are killed in the cause of God, don't call them as dead people. Rather, they are alive, but you do not feel it. Congratulations to all of the martyrs, the fighters, the others who were killed unjustly, the martyrs of men, women, children, young, elderly. Congratulations, as they have now went to that other world, to be with God and his angels and prophets and messengers and martyrs and loved ones, whereby there is no American or Israeli hegemony or hubris, no massacres, no aggressions, no killing. And so, based upon this vision of faith, this is the way we view martyrs. And also, to the families of the martyrs, we say that your children and your beloved have fallen in a battle. If we want to describe it, if we want to look for any conflict which enjoys complete legitimacy from a humanitarian perspective, from an ethical perspective, from a religious perspective, you will not find a conflict like this one, fighting with the Zionists, the occupiers, the invaders of Palestine. There is no doubt regarding this conflict. From a humane perspective, from an ethical perspective, from a legal perspective. So it is one of the clearest reflections of fighting in the cause of God. This is what we must all be aware of. Today, to the families of the martyrs, we say that we extend our pride. The whole world heard, and we heard their stances. We heard what they said. What they said reflects perseverance, firmness, and certainty, and also acceptance of God's will and God's choice for their beloved who fell as martyrs. This is our real strength. Before weapons, our real strength lies in this faith, in this vision, in this vigilance, in this deep commitment to the cause, in this great readiness to sacrifice without any bounds or limits, which is reflected by the fathers, mothers, wives, sons, daughters, and families of the martyrs. I also salute the heroic, the legendary people who have no second in this world. The people of Gaza, those people who we saw on the TV screens, how the men or the women or the children, how they come out from beneath the rubble, whilst their homes have been demolished and their families been martyred. At the same time, they say everything that they've done and sacrificed is for the resistance, is for Al-Aqsa, is for Palestine. This is where the real strength lies. And this is where we can see a people who cannot be described. We cannot find words to express the greatness of these people and the faith of the people and their perseverance and patience, steadfastness. The same goes for what we're seeing in the West Bank, the sacrifice and the firmness and the perseverance in all arenas. Brothers and sisters, I will focus my speech today on the immediate situation to understand what happened and to explain our stance, and also to specify, to make clear our stance and the responsibilities, and to speak about the horizon. Now, when it comes to the situation in Lebanon and the national solidarity which we're seeing and the different dimensions, I am going to point out that this will need a more detailed speech later on. But first of all, I must salute all those who extended their solidarity and protested and supported and stood side by side, whether it be in the world, Arab countries, Islamic countries, or Latin American countries, all the people, all the stances which we saw. And we must mention specifically and salute the Iraqis and the Yemenis who intervened and took part in this holy conflict or in this blessed conflict. Brothers and sisters, what brought the situation to what it is? What is the background of what happened on October the 7th and the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm? Now, of course, I will refer to these points in brief because we have to mention them in order to issue the stance. You know, and the whole world knows, the sufferings and the pains of the Palestinian people for more than 75 years. There's no need to explain. But over the past few years in Palestine, these years especially were very difficult, and particularly with this government, this extremist, stupid, idiotic, brutal government. There are four main themes or four main issues regarding the Palestinian situation. First of all, the prisoners, thousands of men, women and Palestinian children imprisoned in Israeli jails. Some of them have been imprisoned for many years. Some of them suffer or are on the verge of death. But nobody is doing anything. And with the extremist government and with this stupid minister, they further increased the chokehold and the humanitarian situation became very, very bad. Second of all, Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and particularly what happened in the past few months, and especially in the few weeks prior, just prior to the Al-Aqsa Storm operation. This was also unprecedented ever since the occupation of Al-Quds in 1967. Number three, the siege on Gaza, around 23 years, and we have more than 2 million people living in a very narrow space, in a suffocating siege, in very difficult living circumstances, without anyone in the world doing anything whatsoever. Number four, the new dangers which are beginning to threaten the West Bank. The settlement, the new settlement projects, also with this idiotic, stupid, extremist government, not to mention the daily killings and the daily arrests and the demolishing of homes. These are all issues which were pressuring very much the Palestinian people and the Palestinian resistance movements in Palestine. And nobody asks, neither the United Nations, nor the Security Council, nor the Organization for Islamic Cooperation, nor the Arab League, nor the European Union. No international, none of the well-known international bodies ask any questions. The Palestinian cause and what was going on in Palestine and all of these issues, they were all forgotten. It was the last of the priorities of the people, even if it was a priority. And at the same time, the enemy's policies continued to get more extreme and more unjust and more humiliating. And so a big event was bound to happen, which would shake this arrogant entity and its supporters, especially those in Washington and in London, and would hence revive and open up all of these humanitarian issues once again in front of the eyes of the world and once again reimpose the cause of the occupied Palestine and its people who are under a siege and its sanctities which are threatened. So this once again, this issue once again has been raised as the main issue of the world. And hence we saw the great jihadi operation on the 7th of October, Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. This operation, which was carried out by the Mujahideen of the Qassam Brigades, Izzuddin Qassam Brigades, may peace be upon his soul, and other Palestinian resistance factions in the Gaza Strip also participated. This operation, so that's the first point regarding the background. The second point is that this great blessed, expanded operation. It was a 100% Palestinian decision, and its implementation was 100% Palestinian. The owners, or those who carried it out, they hid it from any other party, even the resistance factions in Gaza, not to mention the other countries and movements in the resistance axis. And as part of this great secrecy, this complete secrecy guaranteed the success of the operation due to the element, the great element of surprise. Contrary to what some people believe, because you know, in the current conflict, we have some people who like sedition. Contrary to what some people believe, this secrecy did not bother anyone in the resistance, any other party, not at all, because it was a normal condition in order for the operation to succeed, and it has no negative impact whatsoever on any decision taken by a certain resistance player or resistance movement from the resistance axis. On the contrary, this performance by the brothers in Hamas has proven the real identity of the conflict and the goals, and it has also blocked the road to the enemies and to the hypocrites and prevented them from fabricating, especially when they talk about the ties of the Palestinian resistance factions, their regional ties, usually in Lebanon and Palestine, anywhere. Whenever a conflict erupts, they quickly go ahead and they refer to the Iranian nuclear file, or to serve the Iranian-European negotiations, or to serve the Iranian-American talks, or to serve the Iranian goals in the region. They quickly take the issue somewhere else. These lies, this fabrication, the Aqsa operation, based on its Palestinian decision and its Palestinian implementation, and I also add, with nobody else participating, this all proves that this conflict is completely Palestinian. It is for the sake of Palestine and for the issues of Palestine and for the causes of Palestine and for the people of Palestine. It has nothing to do with any other regional or international issue or problem. Nothing at all. This event also proves what we said over the years, so that the friends can understand and the enemies can understand. Although there are some people who can't understand this truth, which is that the decision making of the resistance factions lies with the leaders of the resistance movements. The Islamic Republic in Iran, ever since the days of Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, reaching up until the days of Imam Khamenei, may God preserve him, it openly supports and adopts the causes of the resistance movements in Lebanon, Palestine and the region, but it does not exercise any influence against them in any way whatsoever, nor its leaders, nor its decision making. What we saw previously, what we saw in Al-Aqsa Storm operation, proves this truth. And for those who want to understand what is happening today and what could happen at any time in the future, must understand that those who really make the decisions, they are the leaders of the resistance, the people of the resistance, and the mujahideen of the resistance. And they serve their own goals, their main causes and goals. Brothers and sisters, the third point is regarding the event and its repercussions. What happened on the ground, we were following it up with all detail. There is no need to explain. We all saw on the TV screens. And It was an act of heroism, act of heroics. It was courageous, well-studied, great, which we must salute. What has this great, big act, what has it led to? It has led to an earthquake. An earthquake in the Israeli entity, a security earthquake, a military, political, psychological, moral earthquake. And it did have strategic, existential repercussions, and it will also carry repercussions regarding the presence and future of this entity. And whatever measures the government, the enemy government might take, whether it took them during now these past few weeks or next few weeks, whatever measures it takes, it will not be able in any way whatsoever to change the results and the repercussions and the impact of the strategic situation for this entity and for its future. A lot of truths have been uncovered, a lot of truths which we have to all know and to shed light on. Of course, not now, but in different phases, to talk about the results and the impact and the great repercussions as a result of the Al-Aqsa operation. All this needs another time. We'll leave it to later on. But the most important point is that it revealed the weakness, the fragility, and that Israel indeed is weaker than a spider web. It's weaker than a spider web. I read in some of the Israeli media outlets, I read something along the lines which says that the Israelis themselves believe, have come to believe, they have come to believe more than anyone that Israel is weaker than a spider web, more than me, that means. And this was proven by the Al-Aqsa Storm operation. Now, the American administration, its president and its secretaries, its ministers, its generals, it quickly went ahead to support this entity, which was shattering, so that it could retake some of its vigilance, so it could rise once again on its own two feet and to retrieve the initiative. But up until now, they have not been able to retake the initiative. And it also provided all different types of support for the Israeli entity. This event and these quick, speedy American measures, this quick action to support Israel, to stand with Israel, this revealed the weakness and the failure of this entity. Look, ever since the early days of the Al-Aqsa operation and in confronting and the Gaza Strip, which was under a siege, the Israeli government needed American aircraft carriers in the Mediterranean Sea for moral support and for military support. American carriers, where's your army? Where's your air force? Where's your navy? Where is this Israel which used to say proudly that it's the strongest army in the region? Look, we have American carriers, American vessels coming. And we see American generals and their experts and their expertise coming to the entity. And from day one, a decision was made to open the American reserves, the weapons caches in occupied Palestine. Israel, from day one, requested new weapons and missiles. From day one. From America, it requested them. From day one, Israel requested $10 billion. It was only just starting. Is this a strong state? Is it a state which can stand on its own two feet, which needs this American support and this Western European mobilization?